Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
There was a girl who called my house and asked for me.
How old are you here? Are you
like 11? I'm 11, 12, yeah. And I was stoked, man. Like some girl. So I actually met up with her and went on a date.
Now, if you were to travel back in time to when I was in seventh grade and visit me in my bedroom at Topanga Canyon and tell me that one day I'd be chatting it up with teen heartthrob Ryder Strong, I'd say, who the hell are you? Get out of my bedroom, you pervert. I'm trying to finish my history paper for Mr. Hamanishi's class. But you would be right, because we are kicking off season 4 strong. Ryder Strong, baby. Now, if you're new here, welcome. Here's the gist. This is a podcast where I bring on fascinating people I'm loosely acquainted with and listen to them share an intimate story from their life. It's kind of like perpetually being on a first date that always goes really well but never leads to a second date. Or sex. I'm your host, Will Tigerbeat McFadden. Also, every episode I give myself a new middle name that's relevant to the guest or the topic of the episode. It's a bit, I've been doing it for 4 seasons now. You'll get used to it. Now, you probably know today's guest from his popular podcast, Pod Meets World, or the show that the podcast is based on, Boy Meets World. It'd be weird if you listened to Pod Meets World and didn't watch Boy Meets World. You're doing it wrong. But you most likely know Ryder Strong as a child star. What many of you don't know is that I was also a child star, just a far less successful one. But I'm sure some of you have seen the 1992 straight-to-home video romantic comedy Only You, starring Helen Hunt, Andrew McCarthy, and Kelly Preston. Yeah, I was the kid who got the wedgie at the Target at the end of the film. I still remember my line was, "Whoa, Mom, Larry gave me a wedgie." Scene. Now, even though our careers took very different trajectories, we both ended up here on the amazing podcast you're about to listen to. This is Hashtag Storytime, brought to you by iHeartRadio.
1989, when I was starting out as an actor as a kid, I was 9 years old, 8, 9 years old. And I'd started doing plays when I was like 6 or 7. And for some reason, and I don't know if this is still true, like for kid actors now, especially kid boy actors now, but it was certainly true then. I was always an urchin. I was always like an orphan or an urchin. I was always wearing like those page boy hats.
Yeah.
You know, and like, then, those like little...
lots of the stage dirt smudged on your face.
Yeah. Oh, the stage dirt just caking me. It's for everything. Like every audition I had, I was like, I was up for the movie Newsies at one point, you know, and I was always like dancing and singing and being a street urchin.
Urchin number two. Urchin
exactly.
Number two.
And which, it's just such a weird thing. Like, I've thought about this with hobos too. Like, why are hobos cool, right? Like, it's kind of like a crappy lifestyle. It's mostly right. Desperation, but it's, you know, there's like this romanticized version of poverty and of right. homelessness. There's and a certain, being a street urchin is one of them.
There's a certain freedom right. that hobos had, I feel like, that,
right,
that we don't
right.
we don't romanticize with current unhoused people, you know.
Exactly.
The hobo lifestyle, I think of like, oh, hopping on trains and like stealing pies right. from windowsills and
right.
and like right. camping out in
America,
a lean-to.
Not having to work. Right, exactly.
Just living on the edge of the forest in a
yeah,
nice little
Yeah, but you know, there's definitely probably some alcoholism and yeah, desperation yeah. and yeah. a lot of hungry nights and people freezing to death on those trains. So,
right.
sure.
Yeah, and definitely like yeah. some children that they are not taking care of somewhere.
Exactly. You know. Exactly. Yeah. So my first real big job, my first big acting gig was Les Miserables.
Oh,
I got
yeah.
cast as Gavroche.
The pup's all grown up.
Yes. Exactly. So this was my big break as, you know, as a kid. Yeah. And it's still to this day, probably the most fun job I've ever had.
Yeah.
My first job and the most fun.
It's all downhill.
But what it meant.
Gavroche.
Yeah. After that, it was just, you know, but, so I grew up in the woods. I grew up outside of Sebastopol, California in Sonoma County, out in the Redwoods. And my parents built the house I grew up in. They were very back to nature-y. Mm-hmm. So this job, which I got by driving into San Francisco and just auditioning, the cattle call audition with all these other kids. Mm-hmm. And I got it. What meant that I was having to go into San Francisco 6 days a week mm-hmm. to be in this play, which was a big deal. Like my, you know, in retrospect, especially for my parents, my mom had to drive me an hour and a half every day to deliver me to do this play. And we were doing eight performances a week. And I alternated with another boy. We both, you know, they had double casted. So there's two Gavroches. And then there were the mm-hmm. two girls who played young Eponine yeah. and young Cosette. And they also yeah. alternated roles. One of them was Larissa Olenek, who I've since worked with a bunch. She's gone on to be a fabulous actress and still
no
works
way.
To this day. She was in 10 Things I Hate About You. And she was on the show called Alex Mack, The Secret World of Alex Mack
yeah.
on Nickelodeon. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, I remember it.
So this is both of our first gig. So what was happening is my mom would drive me down and drop me off at the theater. I would get a ride back because it turned out there was a costumer who lived kind of near us too. So I would get, you know, we'd figure out a driving situation. But for us kids, we would be there at the theater in San Francisco. And we would, on days where we'd have matinees or during rehearsals, which rehearsals were 4 weeks long. And, mm-hmm. and then days where we would have matinees, we would have lunch breaks and we would have a teacher, a studio teacher that was paid to be there, like a welfare worker.
Right.
And then usually there would be one of the parents of the kids would take us to lunch. So one of our parents would show up and take us out. But so the theater, the Kern Theater in San Francisco is on Geary Street.
Okay.
Which is right by the Tenderloin, which mm-hmm. is not the greatest neighborhood. And yeah. this is in the 80s, you know, when Reagan, wonderful Reagan policies
yes,
and
yes.
had emptied out the California hospitals. And there was a huge homeless population, an unhoused right. population, you would say yeah. now. And we got to know our neighborhood. This is how we would spend our time, running around outside of the theater. And it was this weird thing where we got to know everybody on our street. We got to know, you know, all the panhandlers, all mm-hmm. the people who built their little box houses. And at our age, you know, we just thought that they were just people like we,
yeah. Yeah.
and if anything, they were kind of our friends, like, cause they knew us that we'd be going out and we'd walk onto Geary Street every day
were
for
you
lunch
in,
and they
were you
there.
In costume during this with your smudges?
No, but they would leave dirt makeup on our face. Cause if we did a matinee and we had to do a show that night, they didn't want to have to, you know, we didn't have to redo. So we would just be these dirty kids in like 80s denim jackets. And like, I would wear like a Les Mis shirt, but yeah, like it was this, it, you know, we just got to know the neighborhood and we were very unaware that, you know, these people lived a life very different than us.
Yeah,
to a certain degree, there was this cluelessness that was kind of beautiful in some ways, maybe, yeah. but certainly clueless. Right. And I remember our parents sort of like, you know, tugging our arms and telling us to keep going and let's go get food and go back to the theater and trying to like keep us, you know, sheltered. But we loved it. And yeah. of course, the irony wait, here was
were
that
any of you guys like, this is my method and I'm like,
no, like, but that's when I think about it now, study. It's so funny that I don't think it ever occurred to me, but every night as Gavroche, especially the opening scene of Gavroche is him running around in the street
yeah.
with all these homeless people, like beggars. And yeah. he's saying like, think you're poor, think you're free, follow me. He's like the leader of these street urchin kids. And yeah. they had like, there were two women in the cast who would pretend to be street urchins and dress. And they were like Gavroche's gang. And yeah. every day was the best. This is why the job was so fun, is that they didn't care what I did on stage. So every night was different. We, yeah. you know, when we weren't singing and we weren't hitting our marks, we were just running around the stage and we'd be like, pretend, you know, I'd be acting because it was like make-believe. So every yeah. night we are make-believing being street urchins. And then in reality, walking out to Geary Street in San Francisco and like hanging out with the street people. Like, this was, so it was like, there was no line between reality and the show. Yeah. And you know, we were just kids, so we didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, this one night, I had been raised a vegetarian. So one of the opportunities that being in San Francisco and doing a play offered me was that I could go eat meat on our lunch breaks. And my parents weren't around and they weren't serving the food. So across the street was Jack in the Box. And this was my favorite place to go. I was obsessed. So whenever we were like, where are we going to go for dinner, you know, kids or whatever, I was always like, we're going to Jack in the Box.
Because spicy chicken.
Bacon, sourdough, whatever. Like just meat on meat on meat. Because I was like, I'm not home. And so it was just the like, just when I think about this now, I mean, I don't think I've had Jack in the Box since. I'm not a big fast food guy, but it was just the greasiest, dirtiest Jack in the Box you've ever seen.
Yeah, you're on vacation. And,
yeah, exactly. So we're in there one time and we had a female social worker watching us that day. Mm-hmm. And I was like a babysitter or something. And I said, you know, I have to go to the bathroom. So I had to go to the bathroom. I went to the bathroom by myself at 9 years old and I'm in the stall and I hear like this crashing noise and I look down and I can see the bottom of a wheelchair in the stall next to me. And I hear like this banging and the smashing and I'm like, what is going on? What, you know, and my heart's racing. And this guy is in the wheelchair and starts screaming. And I'm like terrified.
Yeah.
And he goes up to the stall and sticks his eye through the stall staring at me and is having a mental breakdown. Like this is, a man in crisis.
Yeah.
But all I think at 9 years old is that somebody is going to attack me. Somebody's going to yell at me.
Yeah, just
and
petrified.
He's screaming at me and basically like, you know, what's up with you? What about you, motherfucker? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, shitting my pants, but luckily I'm on the toilet, so it's okay. And it's like, I had the door closed and, but I had gone from this moment of like sympathy for somebody having an issue with their wheelchair to now like, oh my God, I'm being screamed at by an angry person. And anyway, it was
quick question. Were you in the handicap stall?
No.
Okay.
No, he was in the handicap. I don't even know if there was a handicap stall. I don't know if those regulations, but he was in the stall next to me. So he's screaming at me, clearly just having a breakdown. You know, in retrospect, I can say like this was a person on drugs or just having, a schizophrenic break or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the time, I thought it was about me. I thought this person was going to attack me and kill me. So of course, like after he leaves and I'm bawling and I run outside and I go to the other kids and he's nowhere to be seen. He's like left the Jack in the Box. So now he's out. And like, I begin to have nightmares.
Oh no.
Every night. And I not only have these personal nightmares about the wheelchair man that expands into this like mythological, I start drawing pictures. I start writing stories. Oh, I start sharing this with all the other kids, the other kids. So they're terrified now of the wheelchair man. And he becomes like this boogeyman. And I'm not able to sleep at night. I'm terrified now of walking the streets of San Francisco, which we have to do as part of, we're there. We're going to... And we begin to see him every once in a while because he's in the area.
Right.
And what used to be this sort of like safe playground for us suddenly has this like horrifying, dark boogeyman feeling. I remember Ian, the other kid who played the other Gavroche, at one point we were getting dropped off for work and we were late. So one of our moms dropped us off and then we had to like run the, 10 feet to the theater and all the people are coming in to get into the theater to come see the play. And we get separated in the crowd. And then it's like, the people part and there he is. I can see the wheelchair man. And at this point he has like this otherworldly quality to me. I mean, I literally see a monster, it's like in my mind, I can see his face and it's like, it's inhuman, it's like a Michael Myers mask. This guy is like in this moment and I can't talk. And I instantly start screaming to Ian, who's made it to the theater ahead of me, and I can't see him. And now I'm alone on the streets. And it was just this like horrific period where I went from being like this happy-go-lucky kid to like genuinely terrified of a person on the streets that I had previously felt very comfortable at.
I think the pup grew up in that moment.
The pup grew up. Right, right.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Time is a luxury for us, especially if you're a mom. That's why we need a skincare routine that's easy, fast, and gives us results. Plus, what if your products had thousands of five-star reviews? Were natural and affordable? Well, say hello to Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, high-end skincare that is affordable, and it really works. Not sure where to start? I highly recommend the Work System. It's everything you need in one powerful package. Take out the guesswork with a proven routine that includes a gentle yet effective cleanser, a super skin toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. See what everyone is raving about. From serum sets to the always sold-out retinol alternative TBT cream, you'll find your perfect skincare match. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to DimeBeautyCO.com for 20% off with code GETDIME. That's Dime. DimeBeautyCO.com, code GETDIME for 20% off.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
After several months of creating the mythology of the wheelchair man and scaring the crap out of my fellow kid actors, scaring the crap out of myself, we had this one babysitter for Larissa Olanik's babysitter, actually. So in retrospect, she could have only been like 25 or 26 at most. She hears us talking about the wheelchair man. She hears, this sort of story happening.
Right.
And I don't know who this woman was. I should actually ask Larissa if she's, because she was so wonderful. She took me and the other kids and said, "Let's go find him."
Oh.
And we were like, "No, no." And she took us out of the theater and walked us on around the streets, and we saw the normal all the normal unhoused people that we had seen and we knew. And she was like saying hi to everybody, but she's like asking around until we found the wheelchair man. And she gave us money and said, go give him money. And I couldn't. I was paralyzed. I was absolutely paralyzed. But she went up to him and talked to him and gave him money. And I watched. And of course, in this moment, confronting this boogeyman, I became suddenly very aware that he was sick. Yeah. He was disabled, couldn't walk, and he was a Vietnam vet.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad had fought in Vietnam, and I was very aware of, you know, my dad actually, you know, came back from Vietnam, was very anti-war. And, I was just very, that suddenly this person flipped. It's like they went full circle.
Humanized again. He saw his humanity. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. And I could see that there was a story. There was a sadness. And this babysitter basically completely broke this mythology that I had been building for months. And I realized that in some ways I had kind of wanted to be scared of him. Do you know what I mean? Like, it made it easier. Yeah. It was something kind of fun, but it was obviously dehumanizing. And I guess I think about this cycle of that period of romanticizing homelessness,
mm-hmm.
thinking it's like fun and games and not that big of a deal, to then vilifying it mm-hmm. to a degree that was debilitating for me, but also, you know, sort of fun and exciting, to then having to acknowledge this person's entire humanity and that there was something that, you know, connected somebody like that to my father, you know? And I feel like we still go through these cycles, you know, even though I was a 9-year-old kid actor, I feel like the public conversation is kind of still doing the same thing. It's like, we're always falling on one side of this spectrum. You often hear people over romanticizing the unhoused situation. And then, you know, as like we were saying, freedom or like dropping out or just, and then you, the gutter punk tradition, for instance, mm-hmm. now is like the current version of the hobo situation, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have like the sort of vilification that, of course, is going on constantly. And then I just think about that the course of that several months in my life and how I actually can think of Geary Street. I mean, it's such an indelible part of my brain, this one block or the several blocks of the street. Yeah. And like when I go there now, it's so funny to see, like, it's just a street, you know, it's just like, just another city street. But for me, it was the entire world and how it could change in a moment. You know, it could be this like playground, then it can be this haunted house, and then it can just be the street, you know? Yeah.
It sounds, you know, at such a young age, you had, you know, you went through those kind of three phases that you were talking about, of it being romanticized and then being villainized. But then you made it to the third stage of being humanized. And I feel like, especially in the current conversation, even most adults haven't made it to that third stage of seeing unhoused people as humans. You know, they're still in villain mode.
Yeah. And it's hard because I think we all can have moments where we do all three versions, right? Because to take somebody on as a human requires work. It requires actually talking to them or, you know, getting to know them or, you know, and instead it's so much easier to sort of just flip a switch and be like, oh, you know, that person's choosing to be homeless. They're a drug addict. They're whatever. Yeah. Or that person is a monster I need to stay away from or, you know, whatever it is, to not see them as human beings, you know? Yeah. And I still find myself falling into that habit, you know? And I think it's something that we all need to kind of remember and work on. And then certainly in the level of policy, it's like to not oversimplify in either direction.
You were also kind of accosted at maybe your most vulnerable moment, you know, as when you're on the toilet. You're in an incredibly vulnerable state. This is why dogs, when they're taking a shit, they look at you in the eye because they're like, watch my back. You know, that's at that moment for you to then be accosted, I can imagine that the trauma being so
deep. Was real.
real. Also, I mean, the little gap between the stall doors, just to see an eye pop into that is
my God.
That is
it's
horror
a full-on
movie.
Horror film. Yes.
In that,
I mean, I've seen that done in horror films. Yeah, no, it's perfect.
It's the worst.
I'm going to definitely put it into something I write for the rest of, you know, it'll end up in one of my movies someday. Yeah, I'm sure.
Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosity. The next episode is just going to be called the bathroom stall.
The
wheelchair man and the eye in the stall.
Yeah,
I guess if you could sum it all up as to what the takeaway, the main takeaway, the main moral of that story, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, just about humanizing, you know, to not let your fear drive you, right? Like, even if you have a scary experience with a person, you know, to not
put somebody, another human being, into just a monster category, but then also not to like over romanticize and be like, oh, they're perfectly fine, because a lot of times they're not. Like, people have their own stuff. They have mental breakdowns. They have, you know, issues. And like, obviously, if he had actually attacked a 9-year-old in a bathroom, that would be criminal, right?
That
so that would be bad. And like, he should not have been yelling at a 9-year-old in the bathroom. So there is something to be recognized of truly not good behavior.
Right.
And I guess for me, like, thinking about this moment in my life, like, I've had to revise it over and over again. And I still think about it, right? And I think revising the meaning of the story in a way is kind of the best way to approach it. You know, it's like, is to not settle into one easy interpretation of like, this person was a bad person, or this person was a victim only, or whatever, but instead to see the complexity of all that the wheelchair man was all of those things.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it would be even for me to over romanticize like his veteran status, you know, and to say like, oh, because, you know, that excuses yelling at a 9-year-old, like, not really. Like, no, like, still he probably bad. Needed help, and probably needed help very serious, you know. And so I guess that's why this, you know, I don't really know how to feel about the story other than tell it. Because I think that, you know, I don't want to settle easily into one category, you know. And I think that, like, when you hear people talking about homeless populations, it's like, there's the image of, you know, the mom who just lost her job and is living out of a van. And it's like, yes, that does happen, right? Mm-hmm. That is a significant number of unhoused people. But then you also have unhoused people who are drug addicts or have mental problems. And then there are unhoused people who are true criminals, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's a range. And it's not, you can't say it's all one category of person. And that's why it's such a complicated issue, is that we have to approach it with nuance and constantly be revising it and trying to deal with these people on human terms. And I think that's, you know, if anything, that's the moral I take away, is like, you know, whenever I hear people talking about these issues, I feel like it's so easy to just slip into it. Categorization, not to get too political with my story.
No, that's I would say, and you know, vote. That would be the last.
Right. Exactly.
Hopefully we can get this episode out before. I don't know if that's going to happen, but hopefully if you listen to this episode, you voted and you voted. We've solved
and we'll vote again.
The homelessness crisis in Los Angeles by the time this episode airs.
No. Well, you know, it's so interesting because it's sort of like, I think about this with education all the time, right? Like, people are always complaining about the state of public education in America and like how it's failing this many kids. And I'm always like, yeah, but education is an ongoing process. Like, there is no one solution, right? It's always going to be a struggle. That's the point. So the fact that we spend a lot of money on public education and that public education fails a significant amount of kids, that is a challenge. It's not like there's ever going to be a time when we're like, well, we solved that. Kids are just learned. We did it. We taught them all. And we did it well. It's like, no, it's always going to be a struggle, because you're dealing with kids from all different backgrounds with all different brains and lifestyles. And that's a hugely complicated mess. It's going to be a mess, and it's going to be a challenge. And it's never like, it's never going to fall into an easy, it's done, it's happy. And so I think that's why, you know, it's so easy for politicians, especially, to capitalize on like the bureaucracy of education and to like dismiss it. It's like, but it has to be that complicated. It has to be that bureaucratic. Or like, you know, on homelessness is, it's always going to be somewhat of an issue, because we're dealing with millions of people and we want to take care of each other. We all want to have places to live. We all can't, you know, live in perfect houses. Like, it's going to be varied, and I don't know, you know, it's like thinking of the challenge as like not something with an end, completely like one end solution, but instead like an ongoing process that we have to keep engaging with, and that's not necessarily, it's going to be a challenge and it's going to take work, but it's not a problem that it's an ongoing situation.
Well said. I've got nothing to add to that. Okay. That was, that was a fantastic story.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Time is a luxury for us, especially if you're a mom. That's why we need a skincare routine that's easy, fast, and gives us results. Plus, what if your products had thousands of five-star reviews? Were natural and affordable? Well, say hello to Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, high-end skincare that is affordable, and it really works. Not sure where to start? I highly recommend the Work System. It's everything you need in one powerful package. Take out the guesswork with a proven routine that includes a gentle yet effective cleanser, a super skin toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. See what everyone is raving about. From serum sets to the always sold-out retinol alternative TBT cream, you'll find your perfect skincare match. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to DimeBeautyCO.com for 20% off with code GETDIME. That's DimeBeautyCO.com, code GETDIME for 20% off.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Let's do a little bit of first worst, best last, if all right, you've got time.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so have you had jobs other than acting, or have you been a performer your whole life? Like, have you ever worked
writing, directing? No, writing and directing. I mean, now I'm teaching, so I am a professor now. But yeah, that's just this last semester is my first full-time job in that area, and I think that is the first non-entertainment industry job I've had.
Welcome. Yeah. I mean, also you also host like how many, 2-3 podcasts at this point?
Two podcasts. So. Yeah, but that's all entertainment, right? Because yeah, I mean, writing, directing, acting, voiceover. I've never had like a real jobby job. I mean, those are hard, guys. Those are jobs too.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying you're a blessed man. You're a lucky yes, man to get to do those wonderful things.
Definitely.
Fan interactions. I thought maybe one first fan interaction, like the first time you were recognized, and you know, or the last time, the best time, the worst time. And then I also wrote breakup. So. First breakup, worst breakup, best breakup, last.
Yeah,
breakup.
How do you do a best breakup?
I don't know. Some of them are kind of painless, and you know, it was just like, yeah, it was totally mutual.
That's
true. Just both went our. We were like, there was a handshake, and we were like, all right, well done.
No, I feel like breakups would be pretty boring. I definitely have been broken up with twice over the phone, though. That's the worst.
I've had that,
but I guess it's better than text.
I had one.
I've been with my wife since like 2006, so we sort of missed the like texting, breaking up stage of, you know, dating. And I'm so thankful. Oh my God.
I had an ex-girlfriend break up with me over the phone on her lunch break while she was ordering soup. She was like, yeah, I don't think I can do this. Hold on. Can I get the tomato bisque? Tomato bisque and with in the bread bowl. So, and I was like, are you ordering fucking soup right now?
How dare you?
I was crying.
Oh, that's funny. So I don't know. I guess maybe fan interactions would probably be.
I'd love
best.
That. Yeah. I'm trying to All think. Right. All right. Fan. Okay. So yeah. What was the, let's start with the first time you can ever remember being kind of recognized or that you had a fan interaction. You were like, it was the wheelchair man. He was a huge fan of Les Mis and he wanted to congratulate me.
We would have people wait for us at the stage door, you know, because we were the kids in the show. So we would always have fans, like, you know, especially families, if they had brought their kids to come see the play, they would love us the most. So they would
sign a program.
Yeah. You know? So we'd sign programs. I'm sure there's signed Les Miserables programs out there. and I loved that. I loved coming out, you know, back then, getting recognized was just, I don't know. It felt like an extension of applause. You know, it was like we had our state curtain call and you bow and then you come out and people are actually like excited to meet you and talk to you. And I think it gets different when it's on television or in movies because it's so separated from the actual performance. It's like it happened years ago or, you know, even, you know, weeks ago. And now this person's talking to you and you're never sure if like they know that you're not the character. So that can get tricky. It would have to have been during Les Mis, and it was always a super positive experience. I remember because I did an episode of Home Improvement when I was like 11, and that was like the biggest show in the country.
Yeah, and I was friends with Taryn Noah Smith. He grew up on the same.
Oh, you were? Okay. Yeah, wow. Yeah. All right. That's crazy. Yeah. So I was in a Halloween episode of that show, and I don't think I had realized, like, I had already been acting, but I had done like Les Mis, I'd done plays, and then I had done guest stars on some other TV shows, but none of them as big as Home Improvement. And when I was on Home Improvement, it was the first time everybody knew. And the amount of, like, in my small town, I mean, I grew up in a town of 6,000 people. So like everybody in the town, suddenly, like everywhere I went, everyone knew I'd just been on television. And I had my first stalker, which was just a girl. I mean, you know, my phone number was in the, like, my family's name was in the phone book still. So there was a girl who called my house and asked for me.
How old are you here?
I'm 11, 12. Yeah. And I was stoked, man. Like some girl. So I actually met up with her and went on a date. There was a local arcade called Scandia. And like, that was where, you know, 11-year-olds went for a date, I guess, or a good time. Yeah, so I totally met her. Her mom like dropped her off. My mom dropped me off. And like, in retrospect, like, I, you know, it just goes to show like how little you know about fan interactions, especially as a kid, you know, like I just thought like, oh, this girl saw me on TV and she likes me, so I'll meet her. I mean, she could have been a 45-year-old man at that point for all I knew, just doing a good voice. But
two things come up for me on that. One is that she's somewhere probably still telling that story that she stalked you and went on a date with you. Yeah. And then two is the idea of you two being at the arcade and you just like beating the crap out of her at Mortal Kombat or something.
Yep. Yep. No, I remember we played Terminator 2, the like machine gun game. Nice. Retros are like, this was a good idea to
romantic
take a girl rider. First of all, just, yeah, it's like, what? Oh my God. Yeah.
It's amazing. All right. So that might be first and best.
That'll be a good first and best. It never got better than that. It was a pretty boring day. I don't think I ever talked to her again. But, you know, I don't know what a good day at 11 is like anyway. So worst. That's probably the
easiest. Yeah, we could do last or worst. The most recent one or the worst one. Let's end with the worst one, because worst ones are usually the best.
I actually can't. I'm trying to think what the worst fan interactions. I don't get recognized as much anymore, just because I'm old. So I think the last fan interaction would have been one of my students. Now that I'm teaching, and it's just funny because, you know, they're college kids, so 20 to 22, and I just assume they have no idea who I am. But one of my students brought a friend to come meet me. It's like, we're huge fans. I'm like, how the show started 30 years ago. What are you talking about? But you know, the show's still in reruns and I can't believe it. It's still, you know, and they were super nice and it was very cute. But yeah, so that would have been my most recent fan interaction. Nowadays, you know, I don't get recognized on the street anymore, which I have to say is very nice.
I definitely
sure. never liked the lack of, you know, privacy or just anonymity. Yeah. Like, I really appreciate being able to like walk into a restaurant and sit down and not feel like everyone's watching you or talking about you, which for a while there, you know, in my 20s, that was like a big, that was a thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, I was at lunch one time in Culver City and a woman approached me and interrupted lunch. And she was like, "I'm so sorry, but are you Derek Huff?" And I was like, "No." What? Absolutely not. Have you seen Derek Huff? He's a very attractive man. He's in excellent physical condition. Funny. And I was like mid burrito.
When I didn't have a beard, Jason Ritter and I look almost identical. And so
I went to school with the Ritters
all the time. Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
I was in the same... I mean, I don't know if this is still the case because I haven't seen him for a while, but like we did a play reading together once and it was hysterical. We were cast as boyfriends, actually. And I was like, I asked
narcissistic.
Him, I was like, have you been? And he's like, "Oh, dude, I just used to just sign your autograph all the time." He's like, people would recognize me as you because before, you know, he didn't really work as an actor until after college. Like he went to NYU. Yeah. So before that, I was definitely the more famous of the two of us. And so he would just have to sign my autograph. And then for me, like after in our late 20s, everybody would stop me and be like, "I love you on Parenthood." I'm like, "Not me. Thanks though." Yeah. Close.
Carly Ritter, his sister, was like my first girlfriend in preschool.
No way. Oh, you go way back.
Yeah. I mean, look, funny. Okay, so then what would be the worst fan interaction?
You know, I mean, I've definitely had some stalker situations. Right. And of course, interestingly, all men. I don't think women tend to stalk to the same degree.
Men really take the cake when it comes
really,
to stalking.
Men really, they take it to the next level. Yeah. They take their stalking seriously. It's a job, you know? Yeah, and I don't really know if it's worth getting into much more than like being followed and having people waiting for me outside of places and... You know, it's never gotten bad. It's never, you know, but that, you know, there's definitely a moment when it gets scary, when you're getting weird letters and messages. And I think, you know, early on with like social media, it was this sort of, you know, wild west of like people sending messages through like MySpace and whatnot. There's a way that, and like if you read it, it would tell them that you had read the message. And so like there were, you know, there was just these little loopholes where people would suddenly be like, I'm getting your message, Ryder. I know that you can't answer me, but we've received the message. And be like, no, oh my God, no, I'm not secretly talking to you.
MySpace.
People go into conspiratorial, thinking. So there were a couple of scary instances like that. But you know, I always feel like I don't have it as bad as women, you know, female actors, I think have it the worst. Can't imagine how much, I know like Danielle Fischel who played Topanga has dealt with a lot of, letters from prison and scary men. But yeah, you know, I'm trying to think of just an awkward fan experience. Cause I've definitely had plenty of awkward fan experiences.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, oh God, here's one. And this is on me. I have like a level of face blindness. And that's part of the reason why I hate being famous is because I can never tell if somebody recognizes me or,
or if you're like old friends.
Yes. And so I have consistently had this mistake. And the worst was, I got invited to this gathering. I think it was a Super Bowl party. And it was a Super Bowl party. And I am not a Super Bowl fan. So couldn't tell you anything about the sport. But I walked into this party and where I walked in was right next to the TV. So I suddenly walk in, I'm standing in front of 40, 50 people. And I know maybe 10 people at this gathering, but right. I'm not sure. And I walk in and all these people are suddenly staring at me. And this woman next to me goes, "Oh, hey." And I'm like, "Hi." And she's like, and we're suddenly like hugging. And she's like, "Oh my God, it's so good to see you." And I just play along. Yeah. Like, it's been a while. And I just keep going. And then she finally, in front of everybody, is like, "Well, we don't actually know each other. I don't know you. I just recognize you from television." I was like, "Great. I'm just gonna leave now.
Just gonna hang out by the."
I just gone along as much as I could. 5 minutes, of, you know. "Oh, how's you?" And the last time I saw you was, you know, where I'm trying to. Oh, So that's like by far the worst for me. It's just sticking my own foot in my mouth.
Yeah. But it's acting, you know what I mean? That was you just put on a performance for that whole Super Bowl party.
There you go. That was probably the best acting I've done in my entire life.
Well, Ryder, thank you so much for being on the podcast and for sharing your stories. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Hashtag Storytime. Just want to give another big thanks to Ryder Strong for being on today's episode. If you haven't listened to his podcast, Pod Meets World, go check it out. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode featuring Matt Frederick from one of my favorite podcasts, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Imagine Nick Cannon's drumline without the style.
Okay.
And that was us. Does that make sense? Like yes. Zero style.
Totally.
Just a bunch of kids in Forsyth County, just upright in our outfits, just so serious and crab stepping.
If you're enjoying the podcast, if it made you chuckle or think about life, leave us a review. It helps us out a lot, and I literally read every single one of them. Also, if you have a tasty tale that you want to share, give us a call at the Storytime Hotline, 323-741-1873, and maybe we'll feature your story on an upcoming listener episode. Finally, make sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. You can find the links in the description. Hashtag Storytime is produced by iHeartRadio and Curativity Productions, hosted by Will McFadden. Sound designed by Tony Maddox. Written by Will McFadden and Jason Shapiro. Produced by Jason Shapiro, Daniela Mora, and Jordan Elijah Michael. Theme song by Scott Simons.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.